I'm Cyndi Lauper. My psoriasis was all over, even on my scalp, which may mean four times the risk for psoriatic arthritis. But Cosentyx works on both.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB. Serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. Cosentyx may lower ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX. Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
SecondCityHockey.com.
Jonathan Toews.
Commit to us. Commit to the jersey. Commit to our people here.
Welcome into another episode of Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Dave Melton, the site manager for Second City Hockey, and I've got my usual group with me this evening. First off, it is the analytics darling of Second City Hockey, Shepherd Price.
Hi. Nothing makes you feel better than trying to go for a run in 81-degree weather when you haven't run in above 70-degree weather in a year.
In a year? Like, did you not
in
go
a year.
Running last
Oh,
summer?
No. It hasn't been, like, above 80 in, like, a year, it feels like.
Okay, I got what you're saying. Yeah, well, I mean, it's the pandemic, so everything's multiplied by 10, so it's been 10 years. I was just on a bike ride this evening. It was wonderful, and the bugs are already back, though, because I was eating bugs on the way home. So maybe it's not as much fun as we all thought it was going to be. It was cool for 2 days before the bug showed up.
God, it's nice that it's warm in April, but, like, can it stop being warm in April?
Probably not. Well, I'm sure it'll probably snow next week. This is the Chicagoland area. So, and it's April. So we're still in smarch season. So I wouldn't get your hopes up too much yet. Also with us this evening, he is the Second City Hockey. What Matt Skiba is the Alkaline Trio, but not Blink 182. It is Milsavage.
I can appreciate that. It's way too hot to run. I did yoga indoors with the air conditioning on.
Oh, you're not into bike room yoga?
I do DDP yoga.
Oh, nice.
So it's like, it's kind of more like, it's a little bit more physical, but it's cool.
How many diamond cutters are you doing during that?
Like a fuck ton, dude. It's awesome. It's awesome.
I was made aware that was a thing like 3 or 4 years ago. I'm like, good for DDP. Always a big Diamond Dallas Page fan.
He kicks my butt, dude.
I bet. Well, wasn't he like 6'8"? Like, he's huge. So I wouldn't, like, I feel like his yoga takes a little bit more time. It takes him some work to get down to his legs and all that.
Well, like, it's kind of like not P90X aggressive, but it's like you're doing like push-ups and like mountain climbers and stuff between stretches.
That doesn't sound like yoga.
It's weird.
All right. I'll take your word for it, because I don't think I'm going to be doing yoga anytime soon. But it sounds great. And I'm glad you're doing it.
Thank you.
And also with us this evening, and get ready for this, guys. She is the Boolean Wall of text of Second City Hockey. It is /LBR.
I like that. If we're talking about like outdoor stuff, I went outside for the first like time since the pollen came in Georgia. And I don't know if you guys know about the pollen in the South, but it's like, it's like what snow is to the rest of the country. It's pollen that's here for like a month. It's just yellow everywhere. And I thought I was going to die in my mask, but then I was like, I probably would have like sneezed and coughed so much if I didn't have it on. And all I did was walk from my car into a mall and then back out.
I actually saw several people on various Twitter accounts mention that like their allergies have not been as bad outside early on because they're wearing masks.
Yeah, exactly. And it was really hot, like stuffy, but at the same time I was like, oh my gosh, I probably would have been dying right now because I forgot to pop a pill for my allergies. But I mean, I literally walked, there was like so much pollen on the concrete going into the mall. There were like steps, like you could see people's feet prints in it. I was like, okay, this all is right.
Stupid. Well, if nothing else from this podcast, I learned something new this evening, and maybe I'm sure the majority of our listeners are not within the immediate vicinity of Georgia. So this is all a very educational experience for all of us. Do you guys get any time of the spring where it's like in the 70s, but before like it's unbearably humid?
There's like 2 weeks, maybe.
Okay.
We always talk about how we don't have a fall or spring that much, really. Spring is like pollen season for like a couple of weeks, and then it's like super, super hot and gross. And then fall is like 2 days of the leaves changing colors, and then it's still hot until it gets kind of cold.
I don't think I'm going to recommend you for the Tourism Board of Georgia anytime soon.
I actually like Georgia's weather is so gross when it's hot. Like it is sticky. You feel like you're like walking through other people's sweat. Like I don't recommend the summer here. Okay. When Shepherd said something about 80, I was like, 80 is kind of cool. I wouldn't mind it being 80 more often than like, do you guys know what Dragon Con is?
I can't say I do, but it sounds cool.
It's like Comic-Con, but in the South, and more older stuff, but there are like 60,000 to 70,000 people that usually converge on three hotels in downtown Atlanta.
Ooh.
And the amount, it's always humid. It's Labor Day weekend. When I say that you are swimming through people's BO, you are literally doing that during that time period.
Like, I feel like I'm sweating now just listening to you talk about it. That sounds very uncomfortable. And is it like, it's like comic books and movies and things of that nature?
Like that's it's mostly TV shows more than anything else. They actually get a pretty good, like I've met Jason Momoa there before he was on Game of Thrones because he was on Stargate Atlantis. And I worked the camera crew for the stuff because you get free tickets that way. But it's the only, otherwise the South is like, gross. I'm sure there are other people that like living here, but
you know what? I think that'll be another off-season podcast where it would just be LBR complains about the South.
Yes.
Great. All right. We'll definitely workshop it for the summer. We'll come back to it. But yeah, anyway, so I guess we could talk about hockey now that we got all the other stuff out of the way. I guess.
I'm just kidding.
We're here Wednesday night. The Blackhawks won last night 4-2 over the Dallas Stars. I wouldn't say weird, but I mean, the Hawks were up 3-0, seemed like they were running away with it, and then they weren't, but then they still won, so it wasn't terrible. So the Blackhawks are still right in the middle of the playoff chase with Nashville and Dallas. And I guess it feels like nothing's really changed. It's just been kind of stationary where they're still in the playoff race. Nobody's really pulling away. No one really knows. And all of this is to say is like it's kind of hard to find any pressing issues with the team that have arisen in the last week that didn't get covered in the last week episode of the podcast. So we're going to try something a little different this evening. The idea is we're going to go, this is entirely ripping off of Scott Van Pelt's Sports Center. But the idea is just one big thing involving the Blackhawks, just something big that has stood out to each one of us in the last days, weeks, months, or whatever of the season. And we're just going to go around the horn and we're going to throw out some topics and we're going to talk about them and we're going to see where it goes. And thanks to our wonderful pre-production meeting, Betsy has an idea. So we're going to let her go first and we're going to see where it goes from there. So Betsy, have at it.
So my one big thing is, it's really for more for next season, but I guess it can apply to this season too. But Adam Boquist has made such a great progress with his development this season, I think, since coming back from his COVID. And I think everybody who watches and looks at his stats see that. And the key, I think, for the future for the Hawks is finding the right defenseman for him, because they keep playing him with like Keith. And I think both Ian Mitchell and Boquist kind of suffer when they're with Keith a little bit. I think they're too stylistically like similar and they don't balance correctly. And the most ideal partner on the team is Murphy, but they're both are, you know, right-handed. And yes, Murphy has played LD before, and I think Boquist probably could as well. So there's versatility there, but they either need to hope someone in the system can come up and be with Boquist by next year, or at least the year after that, or they need to try to find someone. Cause I don't think they have the ideal left-handed defenseman for him currently. I don't think it's, I know on paper they were trying to do Zadorov before, and I don't think Dahan is working out quite as well either. So that's the one big thing I think that they need to be striving for in the future.
So I guess my follow-up for that would be to explain why you want Adam Boquist to stay on his left side and not play on the right side ever.
No, I want him to stay
on the right side, not play on the left, because he's a right-handed shot, right?
Yeah, I just...
Correct. He, okay.
Yes. I was like, is this a trick question? What are you asking?
I don't think so.
He's going to perform better on that side. There are certain players that have always liked to play on their offside, and I know that like Jamerson is a perfect example of that, but I think he just got used to it more than it was necessarily ideal. And mm-hmm. when you have a defenseman that you want to be like, you hope that Boquist becomes your number one. So I wouldn't tempt fate by like trying to get him to play the opposite side that he normally plays on. So just let him stay the course and work around him, not the other way around. But I felt the same way about Murphy every time they switched him, even though he was fine on his offhand. I still was always like, but he's too important to like even take away a little bit just because he's playing the wrong side.
Mm. And I think in Boku's case, like the one move that it seems like he's getting much, much better at is if he gets the puck just in the offensive zone, just inside the blue line near the boards. If he's on the right side, because he's a right-handed shot, if he backskates towards the middle, the puck is on his forehand, which is where you want it to be, because that's the most dangerous position you can be in as mm-hmm. a defenseman. If he's on the left side of the ice, it's completely backwards. And then it's not, it seems like maybe it's not quite as ideal of a setup. I guess.
Yes. And Boquist actually has a really good backhand. I think that's part of the reason why Jammer was so good at it. Is because they were better with their, they were just as good with their backhand. But I just don't think you should tempt fate that way. I think you should let him play his strong side and get very good at it before you try to do anything else. So I don't know who that could be, because the other like physically bigger guys they have in the pipeline, Vlasic or Bergula or whoever, they're not, I don't know. They, both of them are arties too. So.
Yeah. And I'm going down the list of lefties on the Blackhawks active roster right now. And the aforementioned Zadorov, who we don't even know if he's going to be on the team in 2 to 3 years at this rate.
In a year, let alone 2 or 3.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I'd like to take the under, but
fingers crossed.
That's a summer episode. But I mean, Nicholas Beaudin's left-handed, but he probably too much of an overlap. You're looking for a stay-at-home left-handed defenseman, and the Hawks left-handed guys are Beaudin, Carlson, Dahan, Kalinuk, and Keith. And I think Dahan is probably the only one in that prototype, and he's another guy who might not be here next season. Why Kalinuk has been an interesting guy, and something we can talk about down the road, but he doesn't fitting as a skill match with Boquist, but I thought he's actually kind of impressive, considering it's his first real stint in the NHL. But Mill Shepard, do you guys have any response to what Betsy said about Boquist being on the right side?
Hi, it's me, the devil on the shoulder. I know I know we've compared Adam Boquist to Shea Theodore in the past, and guess who plays on his offhand and seems to play better on his offhand? Exactly.
See,
it does not ruin the development model, apparently, to put them on their offhand, especially when you're going to play Boquist with a defenseman much better than Derek England and much and similar to Alec Martinez.
Didn't Theodore play on the side that he was supposed to, his dominant side, all through the AHL, and it was only when he got to the NHL though that he started playing his offside?
It might have started under Gallant, but he seems to be doing better on it than he was.
I actually don't mind, like, in their little development year that he's in now, maybe when he hits like 2022, like when Theodore impacted the NHL, then you can switch him. Cause I think the same thing happened to Jarmerson. It was like, he got the basics down on his dominant side and then they switched him and it worked fine. Cause he had the basics already.
Right. So maybe the long-term solution is Murphy, because Murphy is still pretty young.
Could be.
Because, like you said, I think those two are maybe perfect for each other, and there's no, unless the Blackhawks draft a defenseman in like the middle of the first round this season, because they're not, it doesn't look like they're going to get any higher than that. And that he turns out to be a miracle worker, it seems like there's not a miracle solution on this blue line.
Yeah, it'd have to be a trade situation if they were really trying to hit around the same age.
And I think that's the tricky part of the whole thing, because there are probably 31 teams in the NHL that would like another high quality stay at home defenseman. So it's a low supply, high demand position. So I agree completely. And it'll definitely be something to watch in the next few seasons, especially I think next season, because I imagine there's going to be some shuffling of the deck on the blue line of who's still here, who goes, who's in the AHL. That's actually one, now that we're on this topic a little bit, like this offseason should be fascinating with the way the blue line shapes out, because they've got like 10 to 12 guys that have been on the ice at various points throughout the season. So you can only carry so many. And when we, fingers crossed, get back to a quote normal 82 game season next year, there may not be a taxi squad, so that'll change things up. So I have no idea what that's going to look like. I was just, as I'm talking, I'm kind of realizing like, oh, that's going to be a thing to watch for sure.
Yep.
Well,
I think that's a good
real
start.
Real quick.
Oh, go ahead, Mel.
You know, it's too bad we don't have a season to focus on the young guys where they could experiment with guys playing on their off lane.
Okay. No. Do you know, I completely forgot about him, and it's so stupid that I didn't, but maybe the best prospect that could be a partner in the near future is Wyatt Kaiser.
Oh yeah.
It feels like there's too much similarity there, because isn't Kaiser offensively oriented too?
No, he's a stay at home guy. He just broke out somewhat offensively this year. That has never been like his calling necessarily. He's very good at skating and he has scored at every level, but his whole thing is his positioning is really good. And he PKs and he plays the toughest minutes and he always has. So other than the fact that they both skate extremely well, and he's a great passer, I don't think they're that similar, like so much similar. I think he would be closer to a Seabrook in the fact that he could pass, but he can also be a defender. He's also he's like decently sized. He's not huge, but he's decently sized.
6'1", 172, according to Elite Prospects.
I think he'll get bigger, but it just depends on how long he'll stay at college.
He also just played 59 minutes in a hockey game a week or two ago. The game went 5 overtimes, so, but yeah, he played 59 minutes. So some Duncan Keith type stuff. Mm. All right. Well, I think we've handled that topic. So we're going to move on to Mill and ask what his one big thing is Blackhawk style.
Well, like as much as I want the young guys to play more, because that's what they told us that was going to happen, I actually really like the forward group right now. Obviously guys like Janmark and Soderberg are probably not long-term, but I'm just talking about like Suter, Kurashev, DeBrincat becoming a star, Strom showing some strides, Doc. Hinostroza's fast, Hagel's fast. So I like that a lot going forward, but I'm kind of thinking, I know they want to make the playoffs, but you could really flip some guys now, especially on the back end, to look forward for next year, because some of the guys they already have are going to be playing. But I know Soderbergh and Janmark are the guys we've been talking about, but I would even look at flipping Dejan or Zadorov if you can get anything.
Yeah, well, the idea of trading Zadorov is enticing probably to us, but I don't think the Blackhawks have any interest in trading him. I'm assuming he'll be on the roster next year because it seems like the Blackhawks are in love with him. So
yeah, but he sucks.
Well,
do you know what fan group is in love with him a little bit? Toronto.
What's that? Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
For some reason, their fans like him. I was like, if you go into like the Cap Friendly's armchair GM stuff, they trade for him all the time. And I'm like,
oh okay. Please.
And they need somebody on the back end.
Oh, let's do it. I am. Someone call Kyle Dubas right now. I am here for it.
Look, like, here's the thing too. I'm not going to talk a lot about Colleton because we've already done that show like 10 times. But when you have a guy like Zadorov, he can be serviceable in the right situation, I guess. But this guy just threw an elbow the other day. And then instead of stapling him to the bench like you do, Colleton didn't have the stones. And he was out on the next shift after he got out of the box. Like, you can't do that. You know what I mean? And it's frustrating because he keeps leaving his assignments to chase hits and nobody cares.
Yeah, I think that was the scouting report from the Colorado people, too, was that, like, he will chase hits no matter what.
Uh-huh, yeah. He'll make the hit. He'll be 10, 20 feet out of position when he does.
He went behind the net in game 7 of the conference final in overtime, and his man was the guy who scored the goal to eliminate the Avs from going to the final.
But he's counting.
You know, it's like the guy needs, you know, a coach who's going to tell him where he's going to be, and I'm just like, I can't deal with this anymore. Dejan, I like. He's just like, you know, it is what it is.
I think he's just kind of like just good enough to get traded.
Yeah. Well, the only problem is
maybe not a franchise cornerstone, but
the only problem with him is he's made out of glass.
He's doing pretty good this year, at least.
Yeah,
not getting hurt.
Totally. And I'm not making fun of a guy who gets hurt a lot. Like, that sucks. And I feel for that, but cause I know how that goes, but it's like, that's the only thing is like some teams might shy away from that.
Yeah. But I do want to go back to the thing you said about the forwards, because every time I look at the forward group, like it's and we play the hypothetical of whether or not Taze is going to be back, and I'm trying to stay on the optimistic side that he will be next season. Fingers crossed as well for that. But you put Taze into that lineup, like down the middle, you could go Doc Taze Strome or maybe Doc Taze Kurashev, what have you. And then on the wings, you've got Kane and DeBrinket, and I mean maybe Suter's on a wing, or maybe Suter's in the middle and Kubalik's out there, like. That's a pretty good top nine.
Well, even if look at some checking line stuff too. It's like Hagel, Vinostroza, Camp, Carpenter. Like, they have good forwards.
Yeah, I don't think the cupboard is bare on the offensive side of the lineup by any means. Like, and that's why whenever we talk about the level of talent the Blackhawks have, like, because some of these young guys have taken steps forward, and even like DeBrinket, I guess, was still a young guy, although he is in his fifth year, so he's kind of a veteran at the same time. But he's taken a massive leap ahead this season. Oh, yeah. So it's like you go down – you start with the Hawks' top line right now of Doc, DeBrinket, and Kane, and you can put that up against most top lines in the NHL.
Yeah, and something – oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was done, Mill.
I was going to say something too, like, I think because we always complain about possession, but if the Hawks had the puck more, you would see some of these guys doing stuff more regularly.
Yeah. Again, I think you're right. I don't think this is a construction problem for the Blackhawks. I think it's a system problem.
Mm.
You think? I know we don't want to talk about Colleton.
Yeah. People like to rag on Bowman, and he's made some like really questionable trades, obviously, but, but for the most part, this team looks like a good group to go forward with, or at least be the basis of going forward with. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, like this team isn't going to win a cup, and I don't know if they're going to win a cup in 2 or 3 years. But like, if guys keep taking steps forward and draft picks work out and prospects develop and all that, like, I can see how this team gets pretty good in the short term here. And it starts with the fact that they might have a true number one goaltender, which we didn't know that they were going to have that 3 months ago. So,
yeah, I was going to say, we just have to wait to see if that's like a weird goalie situation.
Yeah, we have to see if that is more than a flash in the pan, if it's Carter Hart or Corey Crawford.
Or Jordan Binnington. Yeah.
Well, and that was something in my notes too. They could probably add a backup veteran just to have around.
Not Cam Ward.
No. Not a guy who's retired already and shouldn't be in the league anymore.
So not Marty Turco, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I was going to say not Henrik Lundqvist.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I don't know. Hopefully he's okay, honestly.
He just did a bunch of stuff saying he was feeling great.
For what it's worth, Saad has 12 goals and 9 assists, and his Corsi 4 percentage is 57.7.
I don't want to hear. I'm just too upset. I don't want to hear about it. You know what? No, actually, I take that back. He's he's an unrestricted free agent, I believe, in the offseason. So he could always come back. God knows, if you're a former Blackhawk, you can always come home.
Yeah.
Which actually might come up when we get to Shepherd in a little bit here.
The other thing about this, the way that roster is constructed, is a lot of the talent is homegrown, and then again you add in the fact that Lucas Reichel is fucking tearing up the DEL this season, and it, like, further homegrown.
Yeah, and
he might play next year.
Yeah, exactly. He very much might. And the fact that it's homegrown talent means it's probably on low, if not an entry level contract, a very low bridge contract, so it's more affordable, so that balances out the massive cap hits for Taves and Kane, and that then they might have some money to play with in a year or two, and they can go add a few other pieces. Because if you remember when the Blackhawks did this last time, they didn't win a cup when they won a cup the years after they signed Brian Campbell in free agency and then Marian Hossa in free agency. And neither one of those players were cheap. In fact, one team in the NHL is still paying one of those players. So, I think we've got everything recap from Mill's point. So Shepherd, I know you were not sure what you were going to land on with. So I have a thought that I wanted to throw out to the panel to see what you guys think about this, because and this might go back a little bit to criticisms of coaching we've had before, but before Tuesday night's game, like, I think Tuesday night's game was the first collective performance that I've been happy with in a while. So my thought with the Hawks this season is, it seems like we're seeing a good amount of individual progress between DeBrincat, Boqvist, Lankinen, Kubalik. I mean, insert guy here. There's a ton of guys who are playing much better now than they were at the start of the season. The concern I have is, I'm not sure how well the team is getting, or how much better the team has gotten. And I think this kind of is indicative of the possession numbers we're seeing, the penalty kill being bad, the power play is regressing. There's like, you have all these good pieces. I just don't know how well they're working together. And before the game against Dallas, like, every time they had a game that seemed quote important, they would lose it. So I guess the win against Dallas is a step in the right direction. And I guess I'm waiting to see how the next month goes out before I come to a definitive conclusion with this thought. But at the moment, I don't know how much better this team is getting, and that's a little bit of a concern to me.
I mean, I think we all agree.
I feel like I might be
silence of agreement right here.
Sorry, say that again, Betsy.
I was saying that was like the silence of agreement. Like, can't add anything else to that.
I think we all just communicated telepathically on accident.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, I guess I need to work on my hot takes then, so I can get something that you guys all yell at me for.
Well, it's not a hot take to us. Like, we have this talk every week.
That's true. we do. This does come up in Slack very often. Like, oh, the Hawks are winning 2-0. Oh, they're getting outshot 30-10. Oh shit. The one game where they got outshot 2-1 and won 2-1 was the funniest game of the season to me. That happened within the last 2 or 3 weeks. I can't remember which game it was, but, so yeah, I think again exactly the Carolina game, that was the one. But I want to see better 5-on-5 play. We saw it against Dallas Tuesday night, so I hope we can get to see it a little bit more over the next month, especially with some of the games they have coming up in the next week and a half that we're going to talk about later. Because if there was ever a time for some get right games, this is going to be it. Since everybody agreed with me, we'll go to Shepard. Did you have any other thoughts that you wanted to add to this one big thing discussion?
Vinny Hinostroza returns on Tuesday night to the Blackhawks lineup for the first time in what, it's been 2 years?
Something like that.
And played with a new, a reunited Philip Kurashev and Dominik Kubalik. And those two, especially with Dylan Strome this season, have been fantastic. And it's like one of the reasons I think maybe the Blackhawks are struggling on 5-on-5 is that like one of their best lines is not together. And they have a 60.07 expected goal share at 5-on-5 and a 61.9% high danger share as the trio of Kubalik, Strome, and Kurashev. And yeah, they played really well with Hinostroza, including 62.5% shot share and 65.22% expected goal share. But all this is to say, like, put Kurashev and Kubalik, who are like, it's always seemed like they're meant for each other, and with Kurashev's speed and like Kubalik's ability this season, especially to do like everything offensively, that these two are supposed to be together, and they consistently are not together. And good things happen when you put your best players with your best players.
I agree with that. I like this was something that came up in our comment section the other night, was or after the game Tuesday, was that the Kurashev, Kubalik, and Hinostroza line got 8:24 of ice time at 5-on-5. Doc DeBrincat and Kane got 12:55. Of course, they're going to get the most. They're the best. The line that got the second most was Kampf, Hagel, and Carpenter. Yeah. While I like that line, that is a fourth line.
Yeah, but they're in the defensive zone so much. It's like,
all right. Yeah, you got me there. The Hawks are always on defense. But it's just, although that line did start in the offensive zone, the Kampf line 71% of the time. But Doc's line was an offense.
Holy crap.
That'll make any fucking sense.
I love we all just started laughing.
Oh.
That doesn't even deserve a holy shit. That's just a straight holy crap.
Yeah, the fourth line in that game was Dylan Strome, Pia Suter, and Matthias Janmark with
33.33%. I didn't even look up the stuff after that, so I wasn't – that was like a shocker just – oh, my God.
What is going on here?
All right, now I'm upset. Way to go.
It's
deployment. Like I think the line construction for the last game is good, but now it's just it doesn't seem like it's being used properly. Why is David Kampf's line getting the second most ice time? Like I don't understand that.
It's the obsession, especially with Jeremy Colliton, with David Kampf. That makes no sense because he's never going to score more than like 15 points.
He doesn't have a goal this year.
Yeah.
He has zero.
His
defensive zone starts are like 70%.
Sorry,
Mills. Five-on-5.
His offensive zone's percentage?
No, his defensive zone starts are like 70% 5-on-5. It doesn't even count the penalty kill.
Yeah, but like Kruger had the numbers, and he at least scored like
a goal.
Yeah.
Kruger was.
He's snake bitten, but also he's been taking a ton of penalties. He's been playing like board battles and stuff.
It's not snake bitten when you always shoot directly into the goalie.
He played with DeBrincat and Kane for a while. You should be able to accidentally have a puck bounce off your ass and into the net.
The only time he scored last year was when the goalie was completely out of the net. Every single one of them, if you go back and watch it, was the goalie was like, there was like 3 feet of the net at least open for him. Okay. And this is, I like Kampf a lot because I like Kruger.
I do too.
I just don't want him.
He should not be playing second line minutes. He should be playing fourth line minutes. He's a fourth line center. He's a good 4C. He is not a 2C. He's not a 3C.
See what you did, Shepard?
I was talking about Hinostroza.
I think you brought this around, Dave.
All right. Well, you know what? I'm going to do something that Jeremy Colliton never does. I'm going to call a timeout real quick. And we're going to take a quick break. We're going to regroup, and we're going to come back on the other side of this time.
This is advertiser content brought to you by Frito-Lay.
Hello, I'm Chip Murphy, here to get you ready for the big tournament. Tonight, we'll break down...
We break down who will be cutting. Cut! What are you two doing?
Sorry, Chip. Prez here got his feathers ruffled when I told him Ruffles has zero chance of winning the title.
And I was letting Dip know that she is not taking into account Ruffles' iconic ridges.
Guys, it's March. We have to start talking about the tournament.
We are. It is the 2023 Frito-Lay Snack-It.
We're talking about big-time matchups between Cheetos, Smartfood, Lay's, Sun Chips, and more.
Just head to the Frito-Lay Snack Bracket and vote for your favorite chip, pretzel, or dip for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks.
This sounds great. Keep up the good work.
Just go to Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends 4-3-2023. Void where prohibited. Here's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome back to Music Zone Madison. And as we kind of assembled into a train wreck at the end there, but we did want to touch on some other Blackhawks things that happened over the last week real fast before we get on to some other things. First off, the big news on Wednesday is that the Blackhawks have bought the Rockford Ice Hogs from the city of Rockford at a purchase price of $11.8 million, which I guess is good cash if you can get it. The Blackhawks are going to toss in some money to renovate that stadium, and now there's a 15-year lease at the BMO Harris Bank Center for the Hawks, or for the Hogs, excuse me, that will leave the AHL playing there until 2036. So if you guys were hedging your bets about getting any Rockford Ice Hogs season tickets, there you go. I'm sure Shepard's probably the one closest to Rockford out of all the four of us. So Shepard, you're going to be the Rockford correspondent now, right?
If you want me to, yeah.
Okay, there you go. Start driving to Rockford every night.
Got it. When it's safe.
We did that. We actually got the Ice Hogs granted us press credentials to cover their playoff run 2 or 3 years ago with when Colleton was the coach and Delia was in net. And it's kind of fun. Like it's a different atmosphere than Blackhawks game. You go in expecting something different, but it's a decent show. And sitting in the press box was kind of cool. And I sat next to Chris Bowden at the game and he couldn't have been nicer. So there's that.
Yeah, so I would get thrown out. But it's probably cheaper.
Why? What would you do to get thrown out of an AHL game?
Dude, I don't even want to go there.
Okay.
I would probably start like yelling at the coach that I have to interview when the game's done.
I don't think you can yell at the coach from the press box, Mel.
They will not hear you. Yeah.
They won't hear you, but they will throw you.
No, out. But the people in the press box will hear you. Dave, you cover sports in the region. You've seen crazy stuff go down.
All right, so I guess Mel will not be getting the press credentials from Second City Hockey.
Absolutely not.
Okay, good to know. Also, today at practice, Mike Hardman, who signed from Boston College and signed with the Hawks as an undrafted free agent, he took the ice today. And also, he revealed that he was a Boston Bruins fan growing up, and he cried after the Hawks beat the Bruins in 2013, which I just found hilarious.
He drove from Boston to Chicago. It's good for him.
Oh, he did that. Oof. Too. I know Hinostroza did the drive from Florida to Chicago, which does not sound fun. I did Chicago area to North Carolina, and that wasn't pleasant. So Florida sounds worse.
Props to those guys.
Didn't we talk about this last week?
I think so.
Yeah,
maybe right. Privately.
Oh, I think we did it in the comments, like in our Slack.
Okay. But anyway, because Betsy, you said you've driven Chicago to Georgia, and that doesn't sound fun.
Yeah.
So, and add like 5-6 hours on top of that, however long it takes to get from Georgia to Tampa.
Yeah, it's not good. Yeah. Also, you have to drive through Georgia to do it.
Dude, driving through Atlanta traffic is nuts. I did that on the way to Florida.
Yeah, it's not. Once you get inside the perimeter here, you're just in there for hours.
0 out of 10 would not recommend. All right.
This podcast is all about how I dislike the South and where I...
Yeah, no kidding. But you do like grits. We have established that.
So. I love Southern food.
Yeah, you like... So
anywhere else.
Grits the food, not grit the thing.
So when you move to the North and you open Betsy's Southern Hospitality or Southern Comfort Kitchen or something like that, let me know. I'll come stop by. I'll try the grits.
You finally have grits.
There you go. Perfect.
Well, that answers my question.
We're almost on the topic of food takes. Before we do that, we wanted to get to some questions that came in from the SCH Commentariat, which I don't think is a word, but it is now. BMAC, one of our most frequent commenters / questioners. If we had one ideal or reasonable trade for the Hawks to make between now and Monday's deadline, what would it be? We did talk about the trade deadline a little bit. And if we do one, we talked that there's not going to be, probably won't be much to talk about, but I guess for everyone, if you had an ideal Hawks trade between now and the deadline, and we'll have to recap at next week's podcast, what would that trade be?
Matthias Janmark for a second round pick. And that's a little bit high. That's probably a little bit high. But
yeah, like, if you get a second round pick for Matthias Janmark, I mean, sign it and run away before they can change their mind.
It feels like teams are like not liking this draft, especially past like the first round.
Yeah, I'm with Shepard on that. Like, I don't want them to not trade him and then sign him or let him walk. Because like, if they let him walk, they're not going to get anything. It's not the worst. But I don't want them to sign him to like 4 years, 5-3 or something crazy like that. Sorry.
No, you're hey. The only thing I would add, because Shepard, because of what you said about the draft maybe not being the most well stocked draft this year.
So as a person who kind of follows the draft, it's not about it not being well stocked. It's about like teams not being able to scout it.
Oh, good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess with that in mind, I think this might be a year. I think I would rather have prospects than picks.
Yeah.
I'd rather get a guy that's closer to the NHL because I don't, as if you start like piecing together, like what a Blackhawks future roster is going to look like, the spots are kind of filling up. I don't know if you get another guy that's a 2 or 3 year project. By the time those 2 or 3 years are up and he's ready to come to the NHL, there may not be a spot for him.
Can I play devil's advocate, sort of? If you get a like 2023 second round pick, and then you need to make a trade package because you're in the playoffs, you're going to make the playoffs, but you want to make a push, that might be like a good pick to have, like a future.
So future draft picks, all right?
Yeah, like just because you know they'll either get the draft or they could put together a trade package if they're in a position to do so. For like a rental or something.
Yeah, because to Shepard's point, I mean, some of the CHL leagues haven't even played. Like the OHL, I don't think has started yet.
I think it's I think it's the OHL. Yeah.
Yeah,
because that's where Isaac Phillips is supposed to go.
Yeah, I don't know where a lot of those guys are playing in the AHL with like a special exemption for the season because usually they're not allowed to play in the AHL. I don't know if the Q is playing.
I believe the Q is playing because I've covered Vegas prospects.
And I think the WHL is. I think I've seen WHL tweets and such on the timeline. But
yeah,
I'm convinced the Q plays 12 months a year no matter what from the way people talk about those guys.
Well, they like their hockey in Canada, Mill. That is one thing I am confident in saying. All right, and actually there's another question here at the bottom that I'm just going to send this to Mill because Mill is the Jersey connoisseur of this podcast. Yes. Any help in trying to decide between a reverse retro 12 or a white 27?
Okay, so here's the thing. I'm planning on getting a reverse retro 27, so I do recommend switching the jerseys around. But here's why. The Brinkets were in an A a lot this year because they're alternating captains. But in the jersey's cut where you're not going to wear it with pads, the A sits way too awkwardly on the reverse retro next to the crest. So I would avoid getting a player with a front letter on the reverse retro because it's going to look all jacked up on a fan jersey.
My follow-up question goes to Shepard and Betsy. Do either one of you care at all about that level of jersey intricacies?
Yes.
No.
Okay. I just, because I appreciate how much thought Mill puts into these questions sometimes. And sometimes it baffles my mind. These are things that I would never even consider, like the way the A sits on the jersey when it's not cut for guys wearing shoulder pads. I would have never considered that in a million years. So well, I enjoy it.
To be fair, because I have a lot of jerseys where they have Stanley Cup final patches or like random patches that teams wear. And if it's not like positioned right with the crest, it's just uncomfortable.
Okay.
I don't like the reverse retro because the logo.
I don't like the reverse retro in general. Just, well, I shouldn't say it's fine. I would grade it a C, 2.5 out of 5. It's just, it's okay.
I need to like look at it again, because where does the one jersey that I have that makes me feel like a Care Bear is the one that they had in the Winter Classic. I think it was the Winter
Classic. Yeah, the black one.
Yeah, with the cream in the middle. And it's really cool looking on the players, but it sits like on your tummy a little bit. And you're like, I feel like a Care Bear just a tiny bit. Also, it's a little big on me. That might be
why. Is this like the one they wore in Notre Dame Stadium last year?
No, I think she's talking about the 2009 one.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. All right.
So, there's two versions of that. Yeah.
That color, I best describe it as like if somebody spilled a Coke on a white jersey, that's that exactly what that color
looks like. I think the Pantone for that's vintage white, I think they call it.
Yeah, it looks cream. Okay.
Yeah. it's like the same thing. They have weird names because they have to match the socks and the pants. And that all
makes that. Sense. I just, when you try to sit in it, it's not, it like folds weird.
So like there's two different versions of that, and I'll just be quick with this because I know nobody cares. But the Winter Classic the Winter Classic versions, the ones they sold to fans, they only made them in Canada, and they're like real air knit mesh. They have black laces and no shoulder patches, and it doesn't sit as awkward on that because it's like a real, it feels like an old school jersey. But the one they wore is an alternate where it has like shoulder patches and laces. It does sit weird. I have a Jalmerson one of that. So the back and the front sit weird on me.
Oh, so I might have that one. It was a gift, and it was originally somebody else's jersey. Like they got it themselves, and then they were like, do you want it instead? So I was like, yes, I do. I will appreciate free things.
There you go.
Brilliant.
It was my second Hawks jersey ever. And it was a Seabrook jersey.
Okay, I was going to ask.
Oh, that's awesome. He in that game, he just destroyed Dan Cleary.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So. Ah, good times.
Good call on that. I'll just end with Dan Cleary,
by the way.
I like buying jerseys of guys based on, like, if it was a specific game, like they had a good performance.
Yeah.
Because it's memorable and it's fun. So
that's another podcast for the summer. We're just going to have, we'll have Betsy talk about what she hates about the South, and we're going to have Mill talk about jerseys.
I want to do like an MTV Cribs in my closet.
I mean, we do have video capabilities, Mo. We can look into this. All right. So, but real quickly before we get to the food take, quick look ahead to the schedule for what the Blackhawks have coming up over the course of the next week and a half. They got another rematch with Dallas coming up on Thursday night. So hopefully they win that. But the reason I wanted to look ahead quickly, you have after the Dallas game, you have two in Columbus and two in Detroit. If there was ever a time for the Blackhawks to get things right, play well 5-on-5, maybe turn the PK around, turn the power play around, and just look like an overall better hockey team and beat the shit out of some inferior opponents, that's it. Those four games. And I think you got to get at least 6 points from those four games, if not all eight. And then you go into the terrifying end of the schedule of 3 against Nashville, 1 against Tampa, 2 against Florida, 3 against Carolina, and 2 against Dallas. So good time to get right, guys.
Yep.
Any other burning thoughts about the schedule the next week and a half? Looking forward to the podcast next Wednesday when we'll be talking about how much we hate everything after they lose in overtime to Columbus.
Don't lose to Detroit.
Don't lose to Columbus.
Yeah, that too. Don't lose to any of these teams. They're
don't lose ever. Anymore. Don't lose ever.
No reason they should have lost all those games to Nashville.
I'm still hurting from the one they lost to Carolina with Jesper Foskoren in the last 30 seconds off to just a weird bounce, and he got the puck. And
that whole game was weird bounces.
Yeah,
it was like,
and it's Carolina. They're gonna lose if they won one of them. They that's good enough.
Look, if you're gonna be bad, just be fun bad and lose 9-8. Like, give me something to watch.
Be Pittsburgh. Yeah, be Pittsburgh.
Or any team in the North.
Or Philadelphia.
Philadelphia. There's too many Flyer fans on my Twitter timeline. Do not be Philadelphia, because they are ready to burn that team to the ground in Philadelphia right now. Which isn't.
But give me Travis Konecny. Give me him. Give me both Travises from Philadelphia.
Good. That's fine.
No Rafflecopter.
No, thank you.
All right. Well, I think that's all the hockey things we can need to discuss this evening. So I think it is food take discussion time, and Shepherd Price, it is your turn, so you have the floor.
Malts are better than milkshakes, and across the board, like the best fast food milkshake, like quote unquote, is a Frosty. That's a malt.
Okay.
Like, yeah. Like,
because I was legitimately trying to think if I've ever had a malt. I'm not really big on milkshakes myself. So,
go ahead. It's a milkshake with malted milk in it, which makes it like, it's a different texture. It's like a kind of grittier kind of texture, but it's better. It tastes a lot better. Grit.
I'll tell you that alcohol goes really well in malts. So on that alone.
Yeah, like a chocolate malt with like rum. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh.
There's a bar in Nashville that does a really good chocolate malt with two different types of alcohol in it, but I can't remember. They call it like a mudslide or something. I can't.
Is it Kahlua?
It might be Kahlua, but, and then something else.
Drake Kahlua.
Delicious. It's the only bar I go to ever, that my friend took me to the last time. And every time I'm like, take it back, take me there again. And I never remember what it's fucking called.
If a Frosty at Wendy's is considered a malt, I've had those, but I'm trying to think if I've had a malt anywhere else, and I really don't think so.
You had milk chocolate malt balls?
Yeah, those are gross.
Really? I've been on a malt ball kick.
Whoppers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, Whoppers.
I mean, Whoppers are like the worst quality of them.
Okay, all right, yeah. Maybe that's unfair to the brand.
I think it depends where you get a milkshake from. Cause like, if you get like, I mean, I'm all side with you on this, but if you get like a Frosty versus getting like a really good milkshake somewhere, it's not better than it.
No.
You know what I mean?
But I feel like the malt version of that really good milkshake would be better than the milkshake version of that. Really
yeah.
Milkshake.
I'm cool with that.
All I can think of is for milkshakes is like, when's the last time I went to Steak and Shake? Which I think is the place I went to between the ages of 18 and 21 when we didn't want to go home, but we couldn't get into the bars. So we went to stay.
Every time the Hawks win that I'm at a game, I get off on 30 and I go, me and my brother, we get a victory milkshake from Steak and Shake every time they win. If they lose, we go home and have a beer.
Yeah, I was going to say, I just had a mint Oreo one yesterday.
Ooh. I mean, I'm pretty sure Dairy Queen's still open, so I might share this right now.
Oh, Dairy Queen absolutely should be open because it's 81 degrees outside.
I've been going to Dairy Queen too much the last couple of weeks, actually.
Yeah, I'm trying. I don't have any. I think what we need to do is just I need to make a mental note of this conversation. I need to get some malt in my life and get some more milkshakes in my life, and then report back at some point. So I guess I have to.
Dave, we got to team up and find the places to get all this stuff.
Yeah,
you got homework.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some good spots throughout the Chicagoland area where you can get a good one that's not like Steak and Shake or
McDonald's or Dairy Queen. Yeah,
I'm sure there's a good local place churning out some good milkshakes somewhere.
I was trying to find. I just Googled where they might be in Atlanta, but the first actual article that came up was about Margie's Candies in Chicago. I've never heard of that, but maybe you guys have. They said it's on Agatha Mueller and 14th East. So there's at least one maybe for you guys. They don't make malts very much in Atlanta. So it's like Steak and Shake.
Only. They won't, they'll melt like immediately.
No, we like our air conditioning down here. Okay. It's always on blast.
I literally am being a baby about the weather we have here. Like, I've been wearing my hair in a bun all day because it's so hot, and which is ridiculous, I know. But it's like, it's not even as hot as it is down there.
No, and it's not as sticky. Grossness.
All right. So, the main thing I'm getting from this podcast is just places to go eat. I still got to get some grits. Actually, I saw instant grits at the grocery store and like, that's not going to end well.
That doesn't count.
No, but they did have like non-instant grits, like Quaker style or Quaker brand. So, didn't buy them though.
It was Quaker brand. Like
it was Quaker
on it.
It wasn't instant grit. So it might've been a little bit better, but
I'm going to Photoshop that with like Andrew Shaw on it. Instant grit.
You might want to put Brandon Hagel on there. It might be a little more accurate.
I feel like I use grit when it's like you're taking runs at people.
Okay. Yeah. That's a fair comparison. I think Shaw's more grit. Hagel's just more.
He's fast, man. He beats everybody to the puck. Just, he hustles.
Just Brandon Hagel Mendoza.
How many games has Shaw been missing now?
Most of them.
Yeah, I forget he's on the team at times until they show him on the commercial saying you're watching NBC Chicago or whatever.
So oh God, sad. I was so excited when he came back, when they like reacquired him. And I was like, no, it could be great. And then immediately it was like, oh, it's not.
He hasn't played since February 9th. Played 14 games this season. Would not expect him to be playing anymore.
Well, I think we can at least all agree that Brandon Hagel's living up somewhat to the number 36. Not quite there yet, but he's
earned 38.
Yeah.
Oh, Highmore's 36. You're right. Well, he sucks.
He's living up to the standard set by James Black.
Jersey guy messed up the Cristobal Huey wore 38, didn't he?
Who?
Cristobal Huey.
He did.
So
did
he was like the highest paid Hawk at that time when he was on the team.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm blind.
It's all right, man. Hey, we all make mistakes.
This is why I complain about Dallas's neon jerseys where I can't see the numbers. My eyes are terrible, apparently.
According to Hockey Reference, Brian Bickle wore 38 at one point.
Maybe like for a call up.
Yeah. So yeah, that was your Brian Bickle mention here on the Second City Hockey Podcast. I think we have once again officially gone well off the rails. So final thoughts?
Keep playing Kurashev and Kubalik together.
There you go. And maybe play them like more than fourth line minutes.
Yeah. And when you have a 3-0 lead in the third, let's keep trying to score.
Yeah, don't turtle. It's okay to keep playing. You were doing so well. Just keep doing that instead.
I want a 5 spot.
When the coach is Jel Quenneville, you can turtle. When it's Jeremy Colleton, he doesn't know how to turtle. So
when you do it for the last 10 minutes maybe of a period, but ideally only the last 5 or 6, that's fine. But don't do it,
did it for like 18.
Entire period. Yeah.
I'm trying to think, like, the only win I can think of this season that was like genuinely comfortable was the Detroit one and on the last day of February. And even that one was like, they didn't really start pulling away until the third period. But like, just we'd like to see a game where they get like, you know, get one or two goal lead early on and just kind of just put it into third gear and just cruise it on home from there.
That Detroit one, they only scored that many goals because Thomas Greiss is terrible.
That's true. That game was, it was like, it was comically bad by the end of it. It looked like a shitty beer league game where the goalie was just getting hung out to dry and his teammates didn't care anymore. So the Hawks,
yeah, like they got outshot and they won 7-2. Yeah. Sorry, yeah, I'm done. I can't handle this anymore.
Jeremy,
a team has won 9-0 this year in the NHL. You're not going to embarrass a team.
I've also watched my Premier League soccer team lose that way 3 times now. But that's a different podcast. I think those are all the final thoughts. So yep. Thank you guys for hanging out this evening. Thanks to everyone for listening to this episode. You can find all our stuff at secondcityhockey.com. I am on Twitter at _DaveMelton. Mill is at Mill182. Shepherd is at Shepherd Price. And Betsy is also not on Twitter, so you can't find her there. But you can find all her stuff at secondcityhockey.com or in our elaborate comment section, where her stuff is probably in green because it gets wrecked by the community. You can also find our podcast wherever it is you get your podcast. Please rate, review, subscribe, follow, refollow, unfollow, follow again, then unfollow again, then refollow again, and then leave us like a bunch of 5-star reviews because that'd be great. And then secondcityhockey.com again is where you can find all our stuff. And I think that's going to do it for this here episode of Musings on Madison. For Mill, for Shepherd, for Betsy, I'm Dave. Thank you again so much for listening. And as always, go Hawks.
Hi, I'm Cyndi Lauper. My scalp was covered with psoriasis. Felt like I was trapped between a rock and a hard place. Then I started Cosentyx.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB. Serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. Cosentyx may lower ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX.
Cosentyx works for me.
Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.